Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 18th, 2025, coming to you from my home studio. And we start this edition on the front page, Together Decatur, Fair Queen, You Can Do It. Organizers encouraging girls to join county fair pageants. And this article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. The 2024 Macon County Fair Queen Layla Hackert understands the anxiety a girl may have just before she walks on stage in front of many people. "You're going to do great," she said, offering words of advice. "It's a lot, but you can do it." The 2025 Macon County Fair will be June 5th through 8th at the Macon County Fairgrounds, with the Queen competition held on the first day. Potential Queen candidates for ages 16 through 21, as well as Little Miss for ages 4 to 7 years old, and Junior Miss for 10 to 13 years old, will have the opportunity to learn more about the upcoming pageant during an informational meeting at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 8th, at the fairground. Hackert was motivated to compete for other reasons. "Just because I wanted more representation in the pageant community, more people who look like me," said Hackert, an 18-year-old African-American. "So I decided to do it to encourage other people that you can come from any background." The 2023 Queen Morgan Binder has competed in previous pageants as well as for the Junior Miss Macon County. "You really grow that love once you reap the benefits of your hard work," she said. "It's such a rewarding experience." The new Macon County Fair pageant director, Brooke Burke, is trying to bring back an excitement to the competition. Last year's Macon County Fair pageants had only two contestants. Burke, 26, is a past Queen contestant from Christian County, where the number of young ladies vying for pageant crowns is much larger. "I started when I was in Little Miss and Junior Miss, and I competed in the Miss Christian County," the Taylorville native said. In 2019, Burke was crowned the Illinois Festival Pageant Queen when it was held in Decatur. Her responsibilities throughout the year included volunteer work in Macon and Christian counties, as well as other opportunities in the state. "Unfortunately, after COVID hit, my volunteering was limited," she said. "It was so much fun up until that point. Once the pandemic subsided, several of the county fairs resumed, with the pageants as a highlight," Burke said. "But Macon County in particular, there's not a high interest in pageants as there is in other counties," she said. Nearby towns and villages have hosted pageants leading up to the county competitions. Taylorville's Chili Festival, Pena Tri-County Fair, and the Moequa Powwow all have a queen contest. "In Macon County, there's really not that pageant community that I've been so used to," Burke said. "I'm hoping to bring that to Macon County and get that built." Burke began spreading the word by posting information on other pageants' social media platforms and visiting community events. Her hope is to bring attention back to the Macon County competition. "If you compete in the smaller pageants, you get the benefit of getting your name out there," she said. The winner of the Macon County Queen pageant will receive a $1,000 scholarship. Another reward is the experience, according to Burke. "Pageantry is a great way to give back to your communities and build self-confidence," she said. The volunteer activities represent the contestants' engagement in the community, she said. "You're also building your resume, not just for college, but for your future career opportunities," Burke said. "The experiences with the community had been exciting," the Queens, she said. Along with several parades, the visit at the Illinois State Fair with other Illinois Queens was one of the joys of the year for the Macon County Queens. However, Binder admits the children she encountered throughout her reign brought her the most joy. You just look at you like, "That's a princess," she said. "Then you realize they look up to you. They see you as a role model." Hackert said she enjoys meeting with the community. A focus for the year has been working with others in an OBGYN office. "It really showed me all the different experiences that women have to go through and them being vulnerable," she said. "I also realized how strong we are." After Burke graduated from Millikan University, she went on to graduate from the St. Louis University School of Law. She is now a practicing attorney in Decatur. Burke credits the pageants for giving her the experiences she needed as a lawyer. When I was in high school, I had no fear of talking in front of people because I talked at the pageant every year. And I was in the community and talking to people, she said. Along with the Queen Pageant, the 2025 Macon County Fair will see the return of the Little Miss for ages 4 to 7 years and Junior Miss for 10 to 13 years. It's really important to start pageants at a young age, Burke said. It instills confidence in the little girls that are competing, and they get a chance to get back into their community as well. Binder recommends any young lady who is curious but apprehensive about competing to just take the jump. It's one of those things that you're never going to know until you try, she said. It's so much less intimidating than what people really think it is. The former queen said she remembered as a child watching local queen contestants with their crowns as they walked among the community events. She is who I want to be, Binder said, remembering the moments, and then I got to be that. Very large color photo here. Miss Macon County Fair Queen Layla Hackert seated at right and other pageant royalty sign autographs during the Special Olympics Family Festival on Saturday, September 1st at Lakeland College in Mattoon. Taking part in a variety of events across the region and meeting people of all ages are among the highlights that come with the crown. And they're all wearing their sashes and crowns and smiling for the fans in attendance. Photo credit Rob Stroud, JGTC, and some sidebars here. Pageant meeting, an informational meeting for those interested in participating in the 2025 Macon County Fair Royalty Pageants will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, March 8th at the Macon County Fairgrounds Pride of the Prairie Center. For more information on the pageant and the events leading up to the contest, visit MaconCountyFair.com/queen-pageant. And hashtag Together Decatur. Do you know a person or of a group that exemplifies the best of the Decatur area? Well, if you do, contact Donette Beckett at 217-421-6983 or dbeckett at herald-review.com. Workplace EEOC to drop gender lawsuit, shift in civil rights enforcement scene. This article is by Claire Savage and Alexandra Olson, Associated Press. The federal agency that enforces workplace anti-discrimination laws moved to dismiss its own lawsuit on behalf of a worker allegedly fired for his sexual orientation and gender identity, arguing that the case now conflicts with President Donald Trump's recent executive order, according to court documents. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed a joint motion Thursday to dismiss its case against Harmony Hospitality LLC, which operates a Home to Suites by Hilton Hotel in Dothan, Alabama. Just 8 months after the agency sued the company over its firing of an employee who identifies as non-binary male and gay. The employee worked for Harmony Hospitality as a night auditor and, quote, styled himself in a conformity with male gender stereotypes, unquote, at work, according to the EEOC's original lawsuit. But when he was called in for a meeting outside of working hours, he wore, quote, capri-cut joggers, pink-painted nails, and box braids, unquote. Upon learning about the employee's gender identity and sexual orientation, Harmony Hospitality's co-owner said the employee needed to be hidden because of his appearance, and 7 hours later he was fired via text message, the lawsuit alleges. The complaint accuses Harmony Hospitality of violating Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 by terminating the employee because of his sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, and failure to adhere to male gender stereotypes. The EEOC's request to dismiss the case marks a major departure from its prior interpretation of civil rights law after the Trump administration declared that the government would recognize only two sexes, male and female. That's in stark contrast to a decade ago when the agency issued a landmark finding that a transgender civilian employee of the U.S. Army was discriminated against because her employer refused to use her preferred pronouns or allow her to use bathrooms based on her gender identity. Last year, the EEOC updated its guidance to specify that deliberately using the wrong pronouns for an employee or refusing them access to bathrooms corresponding with their gender identity constitute a form of harassment. That followed a 2020 Supreme Court ruling that gay, lesbian, and transgender people are protected from employment discrimination. Former EEOC General Counsel and Professor and Co-Dean Emeritus at Rutgers Law School David Lopez, who served in the agency for more than 20 years, called the EEOC's failure to defend the fired hotel worker unprecedented and discriminatory. For an anti-discrimination agency to discriminate against a group and say, we are not going to enforce the law on their behalf, itself is discrimination in my view. It's like a complete abdication of responsibility, Lopez said in a phone interview. The EEOC's motion to dismiss the case filed jointly with the defendants came weeks after Trump dismissed two Democratic commissioners of the five-member EEOC before their terms expired, an unprecedented decision that removed what would have been a major obstacle to his administration efforts to upend interpretation of the nation's civil rights laws. Had the commissioners been allowed to carry out their terms, the EEOC would have had a Democratic majority well into Trump's term. The administration also fired Carla Gilbride as the EEOC's general counsel, replacing her with Andrew Rogers as acting counsel. Shortly after their dismissals, an acting EEOC chair, Andrea Lucas, a Republican, signaled her intent to put the agency's resources behind enforcing Trump's executive order on gender. She announced one of her priorities would be defending the biological and binary reality of sex and related rights. Later, she ordered that the EEOC would continue accepting any and all discrimination charges filed by workers, though complaints that implicate Trump's order should be elevated to headquarters for review. Biology is not bigotry. Biological sex is real and it matters, Lucas said in her statement. Sex is binary, male and female, and is immutable. It is not harassment to acknowledge these truths or to use language like pronouns that flow from these realities even repeatedly. She removed the agency's pronoun app, which allowed employees to display their pronouns in their Microsoft 365 profiles, among other changes. Nearly all workplace discrimination charges must pass through the EEOC, at least initially, and the agency's decision to drop the case against Harmony Hospitality raises serious questions about whether its protections will extend to LGBTQ+ and gender non-conforming people going forward. We move on to the local page A2, public safety, three injured by gunfire, Decatur. Three victims, including a 16-year-old boy, were injured Saturday evening when gunfire broke out in an event space in the 1100 block of North University Avenue, police report. Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department listed the injured as the boy who suffered a wound to his left lower side and two men aged 21 and 22. The 21-year-old was transported from the scene to hospital with a graze wound to his head, said Hagemeyer. The 22-year-old was shot in the back of the left shoulder and he showed up in the hospital by himself, as did the 16-year-old. None of the wounds the victims sustained were life-threatening. The gunfire started around 6:40 p.m., and Hagemeyer said more than 50 people had been present for what she described as a memorial event to honor someone who had died. But beyond that, she said police received little information about what had been going on before the shooting started. From what I gather, there was no disturbance, there was nothing to indicate a shooting would happen, and it just came out of nothing, Hagemeyer said. But it's hard to be sure because nobody wanted to talk, much to the police. Hagemeyer said it wasn't clear if there was one gunman or more than one and how many shots had been fired. Anyone with information can reach the police at 217-424-2734 or call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477. Cash rewards are paid for information leading to an arrest. Student struck by carried on vehicle. Decatur, a Millikan University student using a crosswalk outside the college, was hit by a vehicle early Sunday and carried some 50 feet on its hood before falling off, police report. The 19-year-old woman was due to undergo a series of medical tests and scans, but appeared to have suffered no obvious serious injuries from her ordeal, according to Sergeant Jamie Hagemeyer with the Decatur Police Department. She had been alert and talking to officers, the sergeant added. The student was using a marked crosswalk in the 200 block of North Fairview Avenue just after midnight when the incident happened. Hagemeyer said the 57-year-old male driver was not intoxicated and was not speeding. Conditions were icy out there, and he could not really stop that fast, she explained. The driver was cited on preliminary charges of failure to use due care and failure to yield to a pedestrian in a crosswalk. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the Office of the State's Attorney. Man threatens to post sex video, Decatur. Police are investigating after a 16-year-old Decatur girl told them a man she was in a sexual relationship with had threatened to post a video with sexual content on the internet. Sergeant Jamie Hegemeyer with the Decatur Police Department, speaking Sunday, said the threat had not been carried out. She said the case may end up being classified as one involving images of child sexual abuse, and the man involved is age 23. A child of 16 cannot legally consent to a sexual relationship, she explained. Fire blamed on space heater. Donette Beckett, Decatur, has this article. A Decatur resident escaped serious injuries after a space heater caught fire in his living room. According to the Decatur Fire Department, crews were sent at approximately 1:30 p.m. Sunday to 658 East Wood Street in response to a house fire. Firefighters arrived to find the fire showing from the living room windows, Neil Elder, Department Deputy Chief of Operations, stated in a news release. The one occupant informed the firefighters that a kerosene space heater was being used in the living room and caught fire. He was unable to put the fire out using a blanket, Elder said. He left the house and flagged down a nearby Macon County Sheriff's Department deputy who reported the fire and called for an Abbott ambulance to respond. The occupant received minor burns to his hands and was transported to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital for further evaluation. The American Red Cross has been called to assist the occupants, who will be displaced for an unknown period of time, Elder said. With more freezing temperatures expected this week, Elder continues to warn residents to take precautions with space heaters. Safety tips include never plug a space heater into an extension cord unless it is explicitly allowed by the manufacturer. For optimal safety, always plug the space heater directly into a wall outlet. Extension cords can overheat and increase the risk of fire, especially when used with high wattage devices like space heaters, Elder said. Always prioritize direct connections to power sources for safer operation. Keep combustible items away from the space heater. Always follow the manufacturer's recommendations for safe use. We're on the money page here. Breakfast popularity may feed into egg price hikes. This article's by Deanne Durbin, AP business writer. It's a chicken and egg problem. Restaurants are struggling with record high U.S. egg prices, but their omelets, scrambles, and huevos rancheros may be part of the problem. Breakfast is booming at U.S. eateries. First Watch, a restaurant chain that serves breakfast, brunch, and lunch, nearly quadrupled its locations over the past decade up to 570. Eggs Up Grill has 90 restaurants in 9 southern states, up from 26 in 2018. Florida-based Another Broken Egg Cafe celebrated its 100th restaurant last year. Fast food chains are also adding more breakfast items. Starbucks, which launched Egg Bites in 2017, now has a breakfast menu with 12 items containing eggs. Wendy's reintroduced breakfast in 2020 and offers 10 items with eggs. Reviews website Yelp said 6,421 breakfast and brunch businesses opened in the United States last year, 23% more than in 2019. In normal times, producers could meet the demand for all those eggs, but an ongoing bird flu outbreak, which so far has forced farms to slaughter nearly 159 million chickens, turkeys, and other birds, including nearly 47 million since the start of the December time period, is making supplies scarcer and pushing up prices. In January, the average price of eggs in the U.S. hit a record $4.95 per dozen. The percentage of eggs that go to U.S. restaurants versus other places like grocery stores or food manufacturers is not publicly available. U.S. Foods, a restaurant supplier, and Cal Maine Foods, the largest U.S. producer of shell eggs, did not respond to the Associated Press's request for comment. But demand from restaurants is almost certainly growing. Foot traffic at U.S. restaurants has grown the most since 2019 for morning meals. 2019, according to market research firm Circana, pre-lunchtime hours accounted for 21% of total restaurant visits in 2024. Breakfast sandwiches are the most popular order during morning visits, Circana said, and 70% of the breakfast sandwiches on U.S. menus include eggs. Eggs Up Grill CEO Ricky Richardson said breakfast restaurants took off after the COVID pandemic because people longed for comfort and connection. As inflation made food more expensive, customers saw breakfast and lunch as more affordable options for eating out, he said. The growth in restaurant demand reverses a pattern that emerges during the pandemic when consumers tried to stock up on eggs for home use, but restaurants needed fewer of them because Many of them had to close for a time, according to Brian Ernest, a lead economist for animal proteins at CoBank. The U.S. egg consumption declined for more than five decades before reaching a low of 247 per person in 2008, according to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. As nutritional research and marketing established eggs as an inexpensive protein source instead of heart-clogging cholesterol bombs, per capita consumption of egg products grew to the equivalent of 292 fresh eggs in 2019, the data shows. Consumers think eggs are really fresh, so if you're making something with eggs, you know it's fresh, Ernest said. Before the pandemic reduced the demand and bird flu outbreaks impacted supplies, the USDA had forecast that Americans would continue eating more eggs. By 2023, the most recent year for which annual data is available, they were down to 249 eggs per person. Other trends have impacted the economics of eggs. To address animal rights concerns, McDonald's and other companies have switched to 100% cage-free eggs, which limits the sources they will buy from. 10 states, including California and Colorado, have passed laws restricting egg sales to products from cage-free environments. The Life page on A6, Nick Opferman, set for Milliken. Donette Beckett Decatur has this article. Comedian, actor, and woodworker Nick Opferman will be on stage at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, March 8th in the Kirkland Fine Arts Center, Milliken University. The performance is part of the university's 2025 Good Heart event. Beginning at noon Thursday, February 20th, tickets for the general public will be available for $40 in person at the Kirkland ticket office from noon to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday through Friday or by calling 217-424-6318. Opferman is known for his role as Ron Swanson in the NBC sitcom Parks and Recreation. He is also a best-selling author, humorist, musician, and a charismatic woodworker. Having Nick Opferman perform at Milliken is an incredible opportunity. His insights into the arts, craftsmanship, and humor will inspire and resonate with our community, said Brian Diver, director of Kirkland Fine Arts. Nick's visit is a testament to Milliken's commitment to providing diverse and enriching experiences for our students and the broader community. We're excited to hear his stories and wisdom. There's a photo of him at a press event in a suit with his trademark beard, although more closely trimmed than usual. Actor Nick Opferman is 51, is what the caption says, and the photo credit goes to Envision. And the Nation and World, Title IX, Transgender Athletes, A Future Played Out in Court. Trump issues ban for women's and girls' sports, but legal challenges are likely. This article's by Will Graves, the Associated Press. Donald Trump, the candidate, pledged to get transgender insanity the hell out of our schools and keep men out of women's sports. Donald Trump, the president, wasted little time delivering on his promise to address a topic that seemed to resonate across party lines. Trump issued an executive order the day his second term began that called for restoring biological truth to the federal government and signed another February 5th titled Keeping Men Out of Women's Sports. The federal government has now wide latitude across multiple agencies to penalize federally funded entities that deprive women and girls of fair athletic opportunities. The war on women's sports is over, Trump declared. Probably not. Legal challenges like the ones that met some of the other executive orders aimed at transgender people are likely. What is in the executive order? The biggest takeaway is that the Trump administration empowered the federal government to take aggressive steps to go after entities, be they a school or an athletic association, that do not comply. Federal funding and potentially grants to educational programs could be pulled. The threshold for noncompliance, any entity that denies female students an equal opportunity to participate in sports and athletic events by requiring them in the women's category to compete with or against or to appear unclothed before males. The Education Department announced less than 24 hours after the order citing that it was investigating San Jose State University, the University of Pennsylvania, and the Massachusetts Institute Interscholastic Athletic Association, all of which had Title IX violations reported against them for allowing transgender athletes to compete. Determining sex versus gender, and how will that affect Title IX? Every administration has the authority to issue its own interpretations of the landmark legislation best known for its role in ensuring gender equity in athletics and preventing sexual harassment on campuses. Given the push-pull of how recent presidencies view Title IX, it has created a whiplash effect. Joe Biden signed an executive order on his first day in office that interpreted sex as gender identity under Title IX, a move that protected transgender athletes from being discriminated against if they wanted to participate in a sport that aligned with their gender identity, not their sex assigned at birth. Yet it took more than 3 years for Title IX regulations saying that to be finalized. And when they were, they lacked specifics, sports were put on hold by courts. Trump's order explicitly states that sex means the immutable biological classification as either male or female. Sex is not a synonym for and does not include the concept of gender identity. The order adds that sexes are not changeable and are grounded in fundamental and incontrovertible reality. The decision marks a significant shift in the way Title IX is viewed and more explicitly how it is enforced. How many transgender athletes will be affected? That number is hard to pin down. The NCAA, for example, does not track data on transgender athletes among the 544,000 currently competing on 19,000 teams at various levels across the country, though NCAA President Charlie Baker testified in Congress in December that he was aware of fewer than 10 active NCAA athletes who identified as transgender. A 2019 survey of high school students by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN, noted that 5% of respondents said they participated in a sport that aligned with their gender identity. A 2022 report by the Williams Institute estimated about 300,000 high school students aged 13 to 17 identified as transgender. How many of those young people participate in sports is unknown, but it's likely a tiny fraction. Does the order have actual teeth? The reach of Title IX extends far beyond the participation of transgender athletes. Noncompliance is believed to be widespread. The Women's Sports Federation noted in a 2022 report that there were gross gender inequalities across all college divisions, and there was cause for concern about widespread Title IX noncompliance in high school and college and university athletic programs, even before the COVID-19 pandemic made women's sports even more vulnerable. Yet to date, no school at any level had its federal funding rescinded for not meeting Title IX standards that require institutions to provide women with equal access and treatment, said Cheryl Cookie, a professor at Purdue University who studies the intersection of gender, sports, media, and culture. She wondered where all this support for women's sports in general and not on the specific issue had been for the past 5 decades. All these other inequalities have existed, and now you're in a position of power to address those opportunities, and this is what you're addressing, Cookie said. The fact that this is the issue that the administration is concerned about speaks volumes in terms of how we value women in this society and how we value women's sports in this society. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, February 18th, 2025. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour.